what young people need to thrive hasn't changed since we started studying.
Media itself isn't necessarily good or bad.
It's a place where people start relationships, maintain friendships and relationships.
I feel that's our responsibility as educators with the media platforms we give to our students to take home and utilize. How do we help them see the benefits and how do we help them delve into the positive aspects? But it does take effort and we're still learning as we go.
Social media provides an instant way for people around the world to connect. But for many, unplugging from this digital reality can be a challenge. South Washington County Schools, a suburban school district in Minnesota, is looking at how social media impacts mental health for students inside and outside of school through its podcast, Living Online. I'm your host, Kayla Patterson. In this podcast, I'll use my experience as both district lead school counselor and a high school counselor to guide conversations with experts in their field. We'll talk about social media and its impacts on mental health, and how parents can support their child in navigating this landscape. In today's episode, we'll talk about social media, its roles in schools, and how it's changing the way students learn and form relationships. I'm joined today by South Washington County School Superintendent Keith Jacobus.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Park High School teacher Maria Toll.
Thanks so much for having me.
And social media and mental health expert Erin Walsh.
It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you all for being here. So to start off the conversation today, we're going to start off with Erin. So in a general sense, how has social media changed the way people form and maintain relationships?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, in many ways, it changes everything and nothing. I mean, young people have always looked for ways to connect, spaces where they can form identity and communicate and collaborate, and that is true of kids and youth in 2019, just as it's always been. But of course, where that's happening is changing dramatically. So, you know, we used to talk about sort of offline and online friendships, and really the lines between those spaces are increasingly blurred. Because young people today are, of course, extending real world friendships into online spaces and off again, sort of throughout the day. So, you know, we have data that just reminds us that young people are spending 7 hours and 22 minutes a day with entertainment media. So, of course, not all of that is social media time, but it's a place where people start relationships, maintain friendships and relationships, navigate conflict, and increasingly is kind of the preferred space in some ways of where young people are connecting.
I find the connection or starting the relationship very interesting in watching my own kids navigate social media as they grew up. It's so much easier to connect in terms of dating, to start with a text or a social media message that starts the conversation where maybe the two wouldn't have connected in person. So I find it fascinating and also really a positive element of social media that allows maybe a shyer person to get right into the conversation and connect with people in a way that they may not have been able to or wouldn't have done in the past.
Absolutely. I think sometimes we think of these spaces as being like we're so worried, you know, that kids are connecting with other people that they might not know. But we want young people to be connecting. We want them to be forming positive relationships. And I think you're right. For some kids, this is where they feel sort of most seen and known and most supported. And that's a place maybe where there's less barrier for starting that connection and maintaining it.
I think, too, that piece, right, you know, like Moulin Rouge, everyone just wants to love and be loved in return, right? That connection piece. And so many students are, and really so many humans are taking that opportunity to, I like what you said about like finding and really valuing their identity and being able to find groups of people that are similar and really being able to dig in ways that maybe they may not be able to based on just everyday communications or everyday pieces that happen person to person.
Right.
I think that makes an interesting issue for us in education on how we help kids navigate so you're not always listening to the same opinions. Mm-hmm. When you do connect with people who think like you, you may go too far sometimes and not hear some of the questioning aspects of a theory or an idea that might really push your thinking as well.
Yeah, I think echo chambers are so easy, right, to create, and probably even more so it feels like online without knowing it, right, when we think about all the analytics that go into what is actually served to us online. That opportunity for us to be really intentional in helping kids find spaces even online so that it's not an echo chamber and they can find those various perspectives. Because the value is online, you have every perspective available. It's just how much do you have to look to find that?
Right. I mean, the internet is supposed to be this democratizing force, right? So, but it certainly increasingly you have to sort of make that happen. You have to actively seek out people outside your bubble, and people that aren't served up to you via the algorithm. But I think the more that we can get young people to really think about that and kind of use their critical thinking skills about, you know, where do I go and why? Who do I see there and what do I hear? How does that reflect what I'm hearing offline? Or am I being engaged with new perspectives? You know, we find that the more that we can have young people thinking and reflecting and being, like you said, mindful about where they're going, right, the more kind of proactive they can be about, instead of just going where everybody goes, it's like going somewhere for my own personal development or my political development, or, you know, to actually sort of think about your goals as a young person.
So I'm curious, Maria, have you seen that in the classroom?
I think in the classroom we see a number of things. So the first would be that definitely, just in the same way that adults kind of can fall into that echo chamber, that space of finding people that were similar or close to them anyway, even though there is a huge variety of perspectives available. The other thing that I find interesting in the classroom is that I think because we as humans so deeply crave connection, that sometimes that's then what brings students to their devices when they may have an opportunity to connect with somebody human to human or face to face in the classroom. And so that opportunity for us as educators too, to intentionally and purposefully build in time and reason to build skills of how to maintain those relationships out of the online sphere, but also really just bringing people that joy again of what it means to have those relationships with people who they may not otherwise have. So that's one of my favorite things to do, is build those relationships, not just with me and the students, but instead between students, because that's how they'll hear different perspectives and that's how they'll really feel valued and honored in the work that they're doing every single day, both in real life and online.
The idea of leveling the playing field through the social media first connections is really, I think, a positive for kids at any age, but particularly as we're developing our own self concept of ourselves and how embarrassing everything can be to us if we don't feel like we fit the mold. But then I think taking it further, so once that confidence is built up, as you said, in the classroom, make the connection, but now let's connect face to face, which is critical then for that further development where we want to go as the human race, I would think.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite studies, Dr. Clifford Nass, before he passed away, did this incredible study on heavy media multitasking middle schoolers, specifically tween girls. And, you know, the study originally sort of looked at heavy media multitasking tween girls. Everything got worse for them. The kinds of things we want for tween girls. So their self-esteem went down, sense of social normalcy, sense of social competence. So at first, it's sort of all the news headlines across the country were like, social media is awful for tween girls. But Dr. Nass, what I love about the study is that it ended up not really being so much about technology, more about what it means to be human. And what he found was that for every hour of face-to-face time those tweens got back, even if their media use continued to be high, everything got better. So it wasn't so much a study of media are bad, but that when it completely displaces, right, the practice. I think we think of connection as easy, but it's actually hard. It takes practice. It's messy. It's complicated. It's nerve-wracking if you don't have a set of social skills, right? Especially as you're building them as a young person. So we see that a lot in studies on media, right? That at first we think it must be the tech. And it's so much about how we use them. And it's the sort of what are we bringing to the table in addition to the device.
Yeah, one of the pieces that I read was an interesting piece that media itself isn't necessarily good or bad, but the people who have good external relationships, so those face-to-face relationships, media actually benefit, the social media helps them, and they become more positive and more effective in the work that they're doing. But the people who don't have those social skills of connection, or they don't have so many relationships outside of that, those are the people that then are hurt even more by the use of social media. So I just think what a even more important imperative for us as educators to make sure that students are learning and practicing, like you said, those messy skills of how to communicate with others face-to-face, because that does feel totally different than doing it online, kind of in that safe space. And so being able to do that face-to-face and enjoying both the trials, tribulations, and joys of that all together with their peers or with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think you lose that ability of what your brain does to connect us with our emotions. You can't have that emotional connection without seeing the person. The whole concept of the mirror neurons and mimicking emotional reactions between us is lost online. So I think it's easy to go to the negative piece of the online, I think, if you're concerned about kids being isolated, and really to truly develop the empathy and the kindness that we need, and the emotional maturity, you have to be face to face in a conversation at some point, which is great that we still have kids in school coming to school.
Right.
Every
right.
day. So
absolutely.
Right. I see that actually too, even as a school counselor, students will come many times to our office and are struggling with the situation of whatever it might be. And, you know, one of the main questions is, well, have you talked to your friend, for example? Mm-hmm. You know, well, though, it's all technology. And so I think building off of what Keith said, it's hard that you can't judge their emotions when it's in, you know, through technology. So we just see that a lot in the school counseling field as far as trying to teach them those skills to communicate and teach them kind of, those messy skills, because it's not perfect. They're still learning and they're still trying to figure out, their best way to communicate with others. So, Keith, I'm curious, how have you noticed these changes at a district level?
Well, it's changed a great deal as far as when kids put out things on social media that they shouldn't, particularly the harassment aspect or the bullying aspect of social media. That has become a really difficult place and a difficult aspect to navigate for administrators. Many times we hear about threats or things that were on social media at night, and it's out there, and hundreds and thousands of kids and families might have seen it before we even know about it. So we're reacting to that, trying to find out what's accurate, how was it put out there, was there true intent behind it. And so that has been completely different over the last 5 to 10 years, I would say, than ever before. The other aspect is just the ease of communication for us through our social media pages as a school district. We can put out our message quickly. We can get great news out in an instant. So there's some really wonderful things where in the past we had to wait for a newsletter to come out or word of mouth. Now it's out instantly. So both of these examples are the good aspect of it with our positive communication and proactive, and the difficult issue when kids put things out there that you wish they didn't, or they didn't mean to and they didn't see the ramification, and what it does to an entire school community when that word spreads.
Similar to what we were talking about earlier, social media kind of mirrors and magnifies issues that we've always been grappling with. So all of a sudden the sort of cruelty that might happen, or the bullying that might happen, it's likely still happening offline, but then once it goes on social media, it becomes sort of fuel to the fire and kind of mirrors and magnifies, which means that, right, so much of the heavy lifting has to happen at home too, with, as a parent, sort of partnering with the school district, partnering with educators to say, what can we all be doing? Because there's so much happening sort of in out of school time.
I think that's a great point. Social media always, a lot of times gets a bad rep as far as, all this bullying and everything and harassment that happens, but it is something that had been going on before social media even existed. It just wasn't as, out there and reaching thousands of people before, the morning. So I think it is a really important aspect for our listeners to think about. These issues were there, but obviously with social media now, it just makes it almost easier and it brings it to a front where people are noticing them and seeing them a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there's going to be a great aspect for kids, or a positive aspect, as they go away to college and then start their lives staying connected with people that you could easily lose touch with after high school. And as you grow and as an adult, both in the social media pages, but also, and this may be not social media, but just the video phone conferencing and phone calls brings a whole different element to staying in touch with each other, which I think will be really positive for kids as they go, and it is currently for adults right now when kids go away to college.
Yeah, and that, I love the video chatting stuff. I mean, that's true for college students. And then, you know, the last time the American Academy of Pediatrics sort of talked about their screen time rules, one of the big changes was like, you know, video chatting is pretty much always great. Like, all the way down to little babies. I mean, infants don't really know what's going on. But, you know, that this idea that really when we see positive connections happening, that means good things for kids, whether it's heading off to college or whether you're staying in touch with a family member out of state or, you know, parents kind of engaging in those kinds of uses of media with their kids at home can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. One other aspect I feel that has changed for us, which is a concern, is just sleep patterns. We already struggle with sleep patterns with adolescents and our start times and their circadian rhythms. But because of the devices that wash the melatonin out so effectively, when kids are on it late at night, we have a compounded issue that they come to school more sleep deprived.
I think that's a great point. I'm curious, Maria, do you see that in the classroom, or do you hear students talking about sleep patterns and technology?
Yeah, I think that I've heard more students talk about, even to the level of like sleep paralysis things going on, or getting on average 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. I feel like I've heard more about that lately. I mean, since the dawn of time, students have talked about being tired. Adults talk about being tired. We all talk about being tired. But, you know, some of those sorts of pieces where they're talking about something a little bit more significant than just that tired feeling, I have heard more of that in the classroom than before.
Yeah, I think, you know, in so many, I'm so glad you brought up sleep, because when we look at the relationship between social media and mental health, you can't talk about that without talking about sleep, because it's such a strong mediating factor. Once you control for sleep, the impact of social media on our mental health gets much smaller, because we know what our brains need in order to manage our feelings and focus our attention, right? It's that incredible restorative power of sleep. So we know that once screen time goes up, sleep tends to go down. And once devices come into our bedrooms, whether you are a teenager or a grown up, you sleep for less time and your sleep is more disrupted. So yeah, I think that when we think about mental health and screen time, sleep is there's right there at the table, because it's such a strong factor.
So for our listeners, and especially the parents out there, Erin, I'm curious, what are some of your thoughts as far as, you know, with this issue of sleep, of what parents could do and families?
Yeah, it's not a popular one, but I think we all can benefit from a tech curfew. So, you know, sending a 13-year-old into a room with a cell phone at night and saying, you know, you can have your phone, but don't look at it, is really a developmentally Herculean task. So I think we know that we sleep best when our devices are off and away. And because impulse control is just for all of us, is less strong at night, the likelihood that I'm going to be able to resist that text message at 11 p.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m. is really small. So I think when we start looking at social media, mental health, one of the places we can start, honestly, is with a tech curfew. The hard part for you parents listening is that your teenager's not going to turn to you and be like, thank you so much for the tech curfew, your Parent of the Year award. I feel more energized, and I can really feel my mood brightening, right? You're going to get a door slam and you're the only parent. So it's hard. Does that mean you rush into your 18-year-old's room and grab their phone? You know, maybe not. But I think as we're thinking about, as device ownership ages down, so now we know that half of 11-year-olds have their own smartphone, we need to get really serious about how we're protecting sleep and healthy sleep habits, which for young developing brains really means it's off and away at night.
I think on your website you had the phrase proximity is destiny.
You know, that's a quote from designer Tristan Harris, who's done a lot of work around persuasive design. So how our devices are designed to make it, I don't want to say impossible, very difficult for us to unplug.
And so I love that phrase, because then it's just that quick reminder, proximity is destiny. And if it's near my daughter, then chances are she will pick it up. It's just going to happen. That's the destiny of it. And so that proximity piece of off and away, out of the room entirely, is going to be helpful.
Yeah, charging it in a different room, you know. And it's the same thing with homework. If it's close to me and I see a notification, it is so hard for me not then to respond.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if everyone's in agreement on the research, but it probably takes about 2 hours of being away from that screen time to let your brain reset and start to release the melatonin you need, which doesn't put you to sleep. It just gets you ready to sleep. So if you keep pushing that away, you're never going to be primed to sleep, and you're just not going to. And so then I think that's the tough thing for kids. It's not about, if we still had landlines, it'd be great to say talk on the phone till 11 or 12. It's different than what happened, because it different than what happens with the screen because it doesn't affect the physiology.
Yeah, I heard a sleep scientist once talk about, you know, we get to sleep. It's not a switch that we flip. It's an on-ramp that's pretty slow. It's a lot slower than we think. So I think exactly if routines up and think, okay, well, I'm off my phone. Boop, now I should be able to fall asleep. And of course, that's not how our bodies work. So we need that screen-free on-ramp for good sleep.
I think that's wonderful thoughts to consider as we move forward and blaze this new trail of social media. And we know it's not going away anytime soon. So it's good thoughts and feedback for our listeners to think about that sleep and how that affects, you know, your children. Talking about some of the benefits and some of maybe the not so good things that come with social media as well. As we go back to maybe some of the other benefits that we've seen, looking at more in an educational setting, could we expand a little bit more on some of the other benefits that we've seen either in the schools or classrooms?
Yeah, I think it's just been tremendous for students to be able to connect with people around the world and to see what other people are doing, to be able to learn from other teachers. If they don't understand something from the way that I might be teaching it, we can find so many different resources for them. In fact, we can even find fellow peers who are learning the same thing in a different classroom in a different state altogether, and they can connect with that person. And so those opportunities we would have never had. The other piece is I think that it really has done a great job of leveling again that playing field of students being able to have equal access to that sort of information, equal access to, you know, like seeing some of the, you know, like the immersive Google pieces where you can look at Machu Picchu and you can look at all of those places. So students have the opportunity to go on virtual field trips and do the things even with a peer. So that way they can learn about all the variety of things that are in the world if maybe their parents aren't taking them on vacation in, you know, 80,000 different places. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for connection for the benefit of learning. There's also a lot of opportunity for students to, through that connection, learn a lot and get a lot of perspective. But I think that all has to be intentional on not just the teacher part, but also the student part in kind of what their intent is in that space.
I think that calling it social / learning media makes it feel better because it truly is a learning media.
Yeah.
And all of the things that, even with podcasts and TED Talks and all of the things that kids can see in first line research, there's a master's degree out there just on following some of the different podcasts that kids are able to access anytime they want, and adults. And there really is not enough hours in the day to learn as much as you'd like to that's out there. So I see the really positive benefits of that, getting into the first line researchers and hearing from people that are experts in the field that are across the globe, and being able to have that at your fingertips is unbelievable, really, when I think back to my education and what it's like now.
Yeah, and we see kids doing that, you know, outside the school day. Mm-hmm. You know, when we ask, it's like they're doing self-directed learning. This is what we want for kids. You know, we want them to be having questions and, you know, what Berkeley's Digital Youth Project calls, you know, kids are geeking out after school. They're finding mentors there. And that's one of the things that we know parents and, you know, out of school time providers can do is help, instead of just the message being, hey, turn that off, that's a mindless waste of time, is helping, you know, being sort of a media mentor to say, well, what are your interests? And how can I connect you to the sort of reliable sources, to the things that we know you need to kind of develop those online interests? And we know that in out-of-school time, some kids have those media mentors, but a lot of kids are just still spending out-of-school time with media as just the entertainment, just the social side, not the learning media side. And that's one gap that we can really see where adults can play a huge role in helping them kind of jump over that idea of this isn't just a source just to hang out with my friends. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's also a tool to learn. It's also a tool to collaborate. It's also a tool to take voice in conversations that I care about. And we see that, you know, young people need caring adults to help them jump over that gap in out of school time.
And I feel that's our responsibility as educators with the media platforms we give to our students to take home and utilize. How do we help them see the benefits and how do we help them delve into the positive aspects and connect it really with social media? Because I think if we put our heads in the sand and think that we have more to offer in our lesson than social media, that's not going to happen. But I think there's a strong connection that we can look in both ways. So there's learning and social, but it does take effort and we're still learning as we go.
What are some of the ways as we try to you know, jump over that gap and we see some of these benefits. We also see some of the, you know, areas of growth that we need to do as a district because we're constantly learning as technology and social media is constantly changing. What are some of the ways, you know, that we could address this, you know, as a district, or maybe our district has already talked about addressing this?
Well, I think there's the balance that teachers are always going to be the most important person in learning. If we balance, we don't want to give that to the technology, even though there's wonderful things out there, that there needs to be mentorship and guidance and really coaching of kids. And maybe our role shifts from even the thought of the word teacher to the word coach and pulling them in and guiding them as we go forward.
Yeah, I think that piece of guiding students and with the technology available, it becomes so much easier because we can so quickly and easily differentiate and really be able to have students start on their space and be able to help people in every different step because now we have the wide variety of learning opportunities as well as sources and resources to be able to connect them with. So it doesn't have to be 100% of the teacher talking, hopefully not, right? But instead that teacher can be that mentor, that guide, that coach in helping them figure out, you know, what sources to find, how to do that. To be honest, students also help me, right? Find, oh yeah, I've heard about that for sure, but you should also see this, this, and this, because they've been immersed in this their whole lives, where I'm definitely kind of an immigrant to all of this, and that opportunity for them to say, oh, you should also check out this. And so to have students also share with one another the different resources that exist. And I think as teachers, it's a really awesome opportunity. You know, like we said, this isn't going away. So how can we do a better job of really facilitating this? And the opportunity for us as teachers to help students practice that online presence, to practice that online voice, to practice that idea of really connecting with people out in the world so that it isn't just for entertainment anymore, but what would your kind of professional self online presence be? And have students start working through and processing and practicing with that.
I think the point of students helping us is really critical because they really are so well versed in so many things that we need to bring their voice into our teaching maybe more. And I look at one of my sons, no matter what the concept is, if I ask him a question, he's read something about it online. It's just unbelievable how much knowledge, because he's really an eclectic reader and he just goes from one thing to another. And so asking our kids, what do you need or how you could help guide us is really important.
And, you know, we talked to parents about the same thing. And as a parent myself, I think sometimes it's tricky because some of the messier work with technology has to happen at home or happens at home. So we see these amazing educational benefits at school. And then what we hear from parents sometimes is like, oh, but it's so hard at home with screen time. So we lose sight and we, you know, we need to talk about the realness of just how hard it is sometimes to set limits around technology and as parents. But sometimes then we also forget that we can be media mentors too, like that we can find that space. So being really practical, what does that look like at home? Sometimes it's as simple as actually, instead of just saying turn it off, it's like, how did you get to level 3? Or like, how did you get to this next, you know, show me a little bit about what you're doing in your gaming worlds, or, you know, tell me a little bit about where you're going. And one of the things we know is that when parents or caregivers can sort of mirror back those digital strengths, they start doing them more, right? So being willing to take those few minutes to sort of, you know, think about, you know, I heard that gamers are really good at this. What do you think of that? And does that make you better at something offline, right? So we talked to parents about wanting to do a lot of bridging questions, bridging conversations, taking online strengths and figuring out if we can help narrate ways that those also are strengths in offline spaces.
With all the information that we put out there today, is there any other closing thoughts?
You know, even communicating through email has changed, where I have a phone on my desk that rings maybe once every other month, which is really shocking with how many people connect with us, but it's on email. And I think that's something to keep in mind. And many times if I have an email, I'll call because we get to talk about the tone. So I think it's something we can't take for granted and get complacent about. I think it is all of the things that were said here today are important that we keep in mind, and that both parents, teachers, and kids that were in the same venue talking about this and how to use it most effectively and how to stay out of the pitfalls where you can get yourself in trouble before you know it.
Mm-hmm. I think just that piece of remembering always, you know, as humans, relationships first, right? That idea of online and offline, the idea of really focusing in and connecting with one another in that way that we can lift each other up and bring each other to our best selves, whether, again, it's online or offline, because that's really what we crave. And that's really when we all do our best work.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this stuff, it's with social media in particular, it's so easy for us, at least with my parenting hat on, to think about all the things we don't want kids to do. And sometimes it's comforting for me, as we've talked about today, is to remember what we do want kids to do, that like what young people need to thrive hasn't changed since we started studying kids. So, you know, with connection and participation and then boundaries, that the kids are doing all right. So sort of staying focused on, you know, what are the sort of vitamins or what are the protective factors rather than just the long list of fears around mm-hmm. tech.
Well, thank you. Thank you all so much. And thank you so much for sharing all your experiences with social media and your knowledge today. I think the information that was shared in this podcast is just invaluable to all of our listeners. So thank you. And I really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to our conversation today. You can learn more about our guests and find tips and resources about managing social media and mental health online at www.sowashco, spelled sowashco.org/livingonline. This podcast was produced by South Washington County Schools, thanks to funding from a grant provided by Prairie Care.